Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 84, The Sage's Teachings at Kurukshetra. We're doing text 67 to the end of the chapter 71. And we'll do 67 and 68 responsively. We'll do the first verse responsively, then we can read the rest. Yata kamai puryamana savraja sahabandhava parardhya barana shauma nanagya parichadai. Tata kamai puryamana savraja sahabandhava parardhya barana shoma nanagya parichadai. Tata kamai puryamana savraja sahabandhava parardhya barana shauma nanan argya parichchadai. Vaishnavis? Okay, and then verse 67, text 68. Vasudevo Grisena Bhyam Krishno Dava Baladibi Datam Adaya Paribarham Yapito Yadubir Yayo. Word for word. Tata, then, kamai, with desirable objects. Puryamana, satiated. Savraja, with the people of Raja. Sahabandhava, with his family members. Para, extremely. Ardhya, valuable. Abaran, with ornaments. Shoma, fine linen. Nana, various. Anargya, priceless. Parichchidai, and household furnishings. Vasudeva Ugrasena Abhyam. By Vasudeva and Ugrasena, Krishna Uddhava Bala Adibi, and by Krishna Uddhava Balaram and others. Datam, given. Adaya, taking. Paribaram, the gifts. Yapita, seen off. Yadubi, by the Yadus. Yayo, he departed. Translation purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Then, after Vasudeva, Ugrasena, Krishna, Uddhava, and Balaram and others had fulfilled his desires and presented him with precious ornaments, fine linen, and varieties of priceless household furnishings, Nanda Maharaj accepted all of these gifts and took his leave. Seen off by all the Yadus, he departed with his family members and the residents of Vraja. Now, the purport here seems to be going and telling different things than directly related to the verse in translation, but it's important because it kind of gives the backstory to the verse. Because if you just read this verse, you might think, all right, he received all these beautiful ornaments, linens, all these wonderful gifts, and therefore they're satisfied and they left. And so Vishnu Chakravarti, of course, can explain his purport that that's not quite the situation. So, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, at the end of the 3 months, Maharaj Nanda approached Krishna and told him, "My dear son, for one drop of perspiration from your divine face, I am ready to give up countless lives. Let us leave now for Vraja. I cannot spend any more time here." Then he went to Vasudeva and told him, "My dear friend, please send Krishna to Vraja." And of King Ugrasena, he requested, "Please order my friend to do this. If you refuse, I will have to drown myself in Lord Parashurama's lake. Just watch if you do not believe me." We people of Vraja came to this holy place not to gain some piety on occasion of the solar eclipse, but to get Krishna back or die. Hearing these desperate words from Nanda, Vasudeva and others tried to pacify him with valuable gifts. Well-versed in the art of diplomacy, Vasudeva consulted with his most trustworthy advisors and then satisfied Sri Nanda by telling him, "My dearest friend, O King of Vraja, it is of course true that none of you can live without Krishna, and how can we allow you to kill yourselves? Therefore, by all means, I must send Krishna back to Vraja. I will do so right after we accompany him and his relatives and friends, among them many helpless women, back to Dwarka. Then, at the very next day, without trying to obstruct him in any way, I will let him leave for Vraja at an auspicious time of the day. This I swear to you 1,000 times over. After all, how can we, who came here with Krishna, go home without him? What will people say about us? You are a great scholar in all matters, so please forgive me for making this request of you." Next, Ugrasena addressed Nanda Maharaj, "My dear master of Vraja, I bear witness to Vasudeva's statement and take this solemn vow. I will send Krishna back to Vraja, even if I have to do it by force." Then Lord Krishna, joined by Uddhava and Balaram, spoke to Nanda in private. He said, "Dear father, if I go directly to Vraja today, leaving aside all these Rishnis, they will die from the pain of separation from me. Then many thousands of enemies, more powerful than even Keshi and Arista, will come to annihilate all these kings. Since I am omniscient, I know what is inevitably going to happen to me. Listen, and I will describe it to you. After returning to Dwarka, I will receive an invitation from Yudhisthira and will go to Indraprastha to participate in this Rajasuya sacrifice. There I will kill Shishupal, after which I will again return to Dwarka and kill Shalva. Next I will travel to a place just south of Mathura to save you by killing Dantavakra. I will then go back to Vraja, see all my old friends, and again sit in your lap with great pleasure. Indeed, with great happiness, I will spend the rest of my life with you. God has written his fate on my forehead." I guess he wrote his own fate on his forehead. And it's been written on your foreheads that until the day I return, you must tolerate separation from me. Neither of our destinies can possibly be changed, so please find the courage to leave me here and now go home to Praja. And if in the meantime you, my dear parents, and you, my beloved friends, are distressed by the unavoidable fate written on our foreheads, then whenever you wish to feed me some delicacy or play some game with me or simply see me, just close your eyes and I will appear before you and turn your torment into sky flowers and fulfill all your desires. I promise you this, and the young friends of mine whose lives I saved in a forest fire can vouch for it. Convinced by all these arguments that his son's happiness was of prime importance, Nanda accepted the gifts offered him and took his leave, accompanied by the Yadu's large army. Om Jnanatam Randisha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshani Tamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchiko Prachivischa Kripa Sindhu Bebacha Patitano Pavane Vyo Vaishya Vivi Namo Namaha. Now, the first thing you might notice from reading this purport is that this chapter is out of chronological order. In other words, we've already read about all of these events he says he's going to do. He's going to, you know, the Rajasuya sacrifice, killing of Shalva, killing Dandavakra. Those happened previously. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions, actually, and I think we read it in chapter 82, verse 1. It's also in the BBT edition. They quote Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explaining how the story of the meeting of Kurukshetra and the solar eclipse actually goes between chapters 65 and 74. It's somewhere in there that that happens. But so for some reason, it's put here as chapter 84, and actually the previous couple chapters. So it's just that, you know, they've just switched the chronological order. So in chapter 74... the Rajasuya sacrifice was done, and then that's and in there it's all explained what the actual order is of these events. And Vishnath quotes Sanatana Goswami in his 10th canto explanations and commentaries of this. So actually, it's also explained in it's actually in the purport to chapter 78, verse 16. Where Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes the Padma Purana about when this all happens and all of these things are done, then Krishna does actually go to Vrindavan and he spends 2 or 3 months with the Vrajavasis. He spends time with the gopis, all that. And then he winds up the Vrajalila pastimes. And basically, all of the residents of Vrindavan go back to Goloka Vrindavan. They go from Gokula to Goloka. Although some of them have sort of merged bodies with demigods as well. So the demigods go back to their planets, and I don't know how this happens. This is one of the mysteries of spiritual life. Apparently, in your spiritual body, you can be a demigod and be Nanda Maharaj at the same time. So anyway, the demigods who all were supposed to, you know, come before Krishna's appearance, some of them were in the Vrishni families, and some of them were in Vrindavan. They went back, and all the residents of Vrindavan, in their spiritual bodies, got on flowered airplanes, went back to Goloka Vrindavan. So those pastimes were wound up. And it's also mentioned here that Sanatana Goswami gives the chronological order. So this is how it goes. In the Sri Vaishnava Toshini, Sanatana Goswami's commentary in the 10th canto, we find the following sequential list of pastimes. First was the journey on the occasion of the solar eclipse. That's here in Kurukshetra. That's what we're reading about now. Then comes the Rajasuya assembly, then the gambling match and attempting disrobing of Draupadi, then the Pandavas exile in the forest, then the killing of Shalva and Dantavakra, then Krishna visits Vrindavan and winds up the Vrindavan pastimes. So that's kind of the overview of what's happening. And it can be a little confusing when we're reading here about what's going to happen in the future that we read about 10 chapters ago. So that's a little explanation. And of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. It is not necessarily a chronological history. We read things, we sort of jump back and forth, not only between yugas, but between whole millennia and, you know, different days of Brahma. Some of the pastimes will go back millions and millions of years, and then they kind of fast forward more, because it's really a spiritual chronology or a spiritual sequence more than a chronological sequence based upon material time. Anyway, so that's where we are. We have Nanda and the Vrajavasis go ahead. They leave Kurukshetra at that time. They go back to Vrindavan based upon the solemn promise of both Vasudeva and Agrasena, and of course Krishna's explaining to them, and he has to complete a few things, and then he'll return to Vrindavan, which he does. So one of the reasons for this long explanation is to understand that the residents of Vrindavan are really only satisfied by Krishna. They're not satisfied by anything material. All of these wonderful linens, household furnishings, precious ornaments, and everything else that they were given by Vasudeva, which of course he's giving out of love for Nanda, who is his half-brother, actually, and all his, they have the same father and different mothers, but they're all very, very dear friends. And so, of course, he naturally, this is one of the loving exchanges of devotees, he's giving him all of these gifts just out of love. It's not to pacify him, like, oh, we got Krishna, we'll give you some gifts here. No, so it's explained in that way, that you know, that the mood of the Vrajavasis is one of only wanting to be Krishna, and they can barely live with him. I wanted to read, I don't know why they didn't include it, this was the purport, was almost word for word from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport, but the last couple paragraphs in Vishnu's purport they didn't put here, I think are really good, because he gives kind of a final explanation of this, and here's sort of the takeaway on this. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this explanation has been given based upon the two words, Kamai and Puryamana, his desires all being satisfied. These words would make no sense unless there were such an explanation of Nanda being completely satisfied. For Nanda and Yashoda, who could not even believe at all that Krishna was the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, even if testified by Brahma or his sons and daughters, for who all material wealth and ornaments were considered trifling in comparison to just the remembrance of the treasure of happiness attained by touching the back of their finger to Krishna's chin. How would it be possible to satisfy them with millions of silks and valuable furnishings given by Vasudeva? For argument's sake, even if they were satisfied or could be satisfied, the text also mentions that not only Nanda and his wife, but all the inhabitants of Braja, all the gopas and gopis, and all his friends were satisfied. If one were to explain that Krishna's mother and father and his and also his dear gopis and all of his coward friends were satisfied simply by getting valuable ornaments of cloth and jewels and departed to Vraja, then the prema of all the inhabitants of Vraja must have disappeared. We don't believe that. We should consider this matter in light of the statements in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, which states, the characteristic of prema is ananyam mamata, unflinching sense of possessiveness towards one's beloved, wherein one is completely apathetic to other objects. Therefore, such an explanation should be rejected. Now, this explanation that they no longer had Krishna prema and they were satisfied by material objects, you say, no, that can't be the case. So, this characteristic of prema, of course, is the characteristic of the Vrajavasis, residents of Vrindavan. They're situated in the highest love of God, and therefore they only want Krishna, and they have no interest in anything material. In the Nectar Devotion, it's explained that there are six results of devotional service. One of those is that it's rarely achieved. So, why? Krishna, it's described in the Nectar Devotion, says, Krishna can easily offer a person material happiness or even liberation, but he does not agree very easily to award a person engagement in his devotional service. So why is it not easily awarded? Because Krishna is purchased by the love of his devotees. And of course, this is the example that we see of the Vrajavasis here. Krishna is so indebted to them. He says, I can't possibly leave you. You know, of course I'll come and see you. I have to do a few things, but, you know, just remember that I am always with you. Simply close your eyes and you can see all my pastimes, which they could, of course. But I think we were mentioning the other day that some of them weren't satisfied with that. The most elevated, the most advanced devotees who had the deepest love, they weren't satisfied just by seeing and remembering Krishna in their mind, which they could, of course. Krishna would be there. He'd be present in their remembrance. The remembrance of Krishna is non-different, but that wasn't really what they wanted. They wanted Krishna presently, you know, in his form before them. So this is pure devotional service. It's very rare. It's not only very rare because Krishna's a little bit reluctant to give pure devotional service, but the qualification of pure devotional service is very rare. We're reading about the most exalted devotees in the entire universe, in the most exalted in the spiritual realm, what to speak of in any material situation. So it is a rare thing. And it's rare because one must be free from all material desires. Just as Nanda and the others, we're not satisfied by anything material. That, okay, fine, thank you, but this isn't what we want. And this is a very rare thing, to be completely free from any desire for anything in this material world, and to only be satisfied with one's loving relationship with Krishna. So, of course, the characteristics of pure devotional service are described in our scriptures. Nectar devotion, Nectar Samrita Sindhu, describes this most particularly in the Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse of 1.1.11. The key verse, the Paribhasha Sutra of the Nectar devotion, we talk about it a lot. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it because I think it's something we've discussed a lot in this class, and for good reason, because I was looking, Prabhupada cites the Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse about 462 times, you know, are mentioned in the Veda base. So it's a very, very key verse. But basically, it describes that there's three primary characteristics of pure devotional service. That it's anukulyena, it's favorable, anushilanam, that it's continuous, without stop, and it's krishnanushilanam, that Krishna is the only object. Pure devotional service can't be directed towards the demigods or anyone else. It has to be towards Krishna. It's continuous, without motivation. It's favorable. And it's also the descriptions of what is not, or what disqualifies the definition of pure devotional service. And that's, of course, jnana karmanya navrita, and which Srila Prabhupada defines as, in another purport, devoid of monism, fruit of action, and material desires. In other words, one has no desire for jnana, for speculative knowledge or material knowledge. One has no desire for karma, for fruitive activities or material sense gratification. And anavrata includes everything else. Prabhupada says, like yoga and, you know, any other desires or any other philosophies or anything else that might be there. So that's a real challenge. That's a challenge to devotees, because we know that that's the goal of pure devotional service. And I don't see, well, sometimes you do. Sometimes you see devotees get absorbed in philosophy or other philosophies, and they might have intellectual doubts. But I think that's more rare. Most devotees, I think most of us struggle more with the karma aspect. The karma mishra bhakta, or karma mishra bhakti, is bhakti mixed with material desires and fruitive work. And that's the stage that many of us find ourselves at. Certainly, we have desires for pure devotional service, but then there are also material desires along the way. Now, fortunately, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and Srila Prabhupada had devised such a wonderful plan for the Sankirtan movement that there's a solution for us. Prabhupada gave us a path of pure devotional service. We are not practicing karma mishra yoga or jnana mishra bhakti. We are performing the process of pure devotional service, even though we may not yet be pure devotees. So we're on the path of pure devotion, but we have some remaining attachments. And therefore, there's a process. Therefore, the process of bhakti yoga is given to us in Nectar Devotion and many other places, that we have this way of purification of all material desires. And of course, after we establish our relationship with Guru, we establish our relationship with devotees, then we begin that process of hearing and chanting, the Bhajana Kriya, the nine processes of devotional service under the order of the spiritual master, which helps to purify us of those material desires. And that purifying stage, of course, anartha nivritti stage, is there where we are clearing those past desires, those bad habits, the impressions that are in the mind. We talked about that the other day, the sanskaras, the impressions of the mind from many, many lifetimes, the propensities that we have towards bad habits. So we're in the process of clearing those. And that's why Prabhupada's instruction and all our guru's instructions are to chant 16 rounds a day, to follow the four regular principles. When we do these things under the order of the spiritual master, then we are situated in that realm of pure devotional service, in under the internal potency of the Lord. And so it is described that the devotee's life is not ordinary. And even if there's still some material desires, we are rightly situated. So that purification will come about through that active engagement in Krishna consciousness, with that foundation of the regular principles and our active engagement in hearing and chanting, particularly chanting 16 rounds a day. Then we begin the activity of devotional service. And Jiva Goswami describes in his in the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu commentaries that there are two forms of service. One is called bhava-rupa, or the emotional form, which is at the stage of bhava and prema. So for me and most of us, we have chasta-rupa-bhakti, which is the active form, where we use the body, the words, and the mind. We use everything in the service of Krishna, everything in the service of devotional service to Krishna and Guru. And that practical service was very much emphasized by Srila Prabhupada. No, it's a way of engaging the senses. That's what we do. We purify the senses by engaging the senses in acts of devotion. So many examples are given. Prabhupada gives example of you put the rod in the fire, you take it out and it's glowing. It has all the characteristics of heat and light like fire, but it's actually an iron rod. So in the same way, even though we have material bodies, material senses, material minds, when they become absorbed in the fire of Krishna consciousness, they become spiritualized. So that spiritualization process of the material is the basis of Krishna consciousness. And a large part of that is active bhakti yoga, devotional service. In the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada emphasized this idea, this activity, and one of my favorite quotes, he says, "The execution of devotional service is not a matter of idle meditation, but practical action in the foreground of spiritual life." In other words, as devotees, you have to do something. We don't just sit and meditate. We serve Krishna. Of course, that is, you can. Conceivably, we know the story. You know, there's the stories of someone who had no facility to serve Krishna, so he served Krishna in his mind, and he did the offerings, and he did the artik, and he was so absorbed because he had such a pure concentration on the Lord. And what was that when he put his finger in the sweet rice? It was simply in his mind. He actually burned his finger because his absorption was so great, you know, that it was none different than actually doing the service. But for most of us, if we're not on that platform, better to actually do the service than just to imagine doing it in our minds. And that's what Prabhupada always emphasized. So when we're practically engaged in devotional service, when we are chanting and hearing, and we are sincerely trying to serve Krishna, even though that service may be mixed with some aspects, some, you know, from the past, some traces of karma and jnana, then that sincere service will lead us to pure service because it values the goal of pure devotional service. And that's very important. It's very important for devotees to understand that this is our goal. You know, whether I'm there or not, whether I am completely pure or not, the goal is pure devotional service. I'm following the pure devotee, and I'm following the path of pure devotional service. And one of my other quotes that I quote at least once every other month because it's just so nice is that Krishna gives us hope in this process. Krishna says in Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, 20th chapter, verse 27 and 28, "Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, My devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. So this is the position of the sincere devotee, that even though there are material desires, we feel bad about those material desires, and we remain determined on a path of bhakti, remain determined to serve our spiritual master, to hear and to chant about Krishna and glorify Krishna. In fact, in his purport to that verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, he explains what a sincere devotee is. And he says, the sincere devotee has more determination toward bhakti than inclination for material things. In other words, it may be a delicate balance, but as long as we have more desire, more inclination towards bhakti, towards Krishna, than we do towards material, then at least we're moving in the right direction and rightly situated. And of course, the next verse, verse 29, after that, Krishna says, when an intelligent person engages constantly in worshiping me through loving devotional service as described by me, his heart becomes firmly situated in me. Thus, all material desires within the heart are destroyed. So we always return to the process of hearing and chanting. And that if that hearing and chanting is done with faith and devotion and determination, it will eventually destroy all the desires within the heart. So we simply have to have that sincerity of purpose and have that desire. And we see that, you know, Krishna is very, very willing to help the desires, to help purify the desires of the devotee, so that more and more we only want to have Krishna. And we see as our sort of our role models, the Vrajavasis. We hear these stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the great pure devotees. And one of the reasons we hear these stories is so that we know what the goal is. Not that we try to imitate those on this highest level of pure devotional service, but at least we see what that is. We see what's ahead of us. We have a glimpse into what the outcome of our years and years of devotion, or lifetimes of devotional service is. You know, that we can develop, not that we're going to become Nanda Maharaj or, you know, Yashoda or Gopi, you know, their eternal associates, you know, but we can have that type of devotion where all we want is Krishna. Sometimes it's almost hard to imagine, to have no other desire. Every moment, all I want is to see Krishna, to be with Krishna. You know, but we cultivate that. We start to develop it and cultivate that. And the more that we become absorbed in that, and we understand that, and we're hearing these pastimes, then our mind becomes purified just in hearing them, just in hearing about the great devotees. It starts to work. The purification process starts to cleanse the dust of the mirror of the mind. And more the true self, which is a pure servant in loving relationship with Krishna, comes forward, comes out, develops, becomes uncovered. And then there's no question of material desire. It simply isn't there. It's simply a lesser thing. It's the lower taste. And when one achieves the higher taste, then the lower taste no longer has attraction. So we're kind of in that, many of us, or some of you may be experiencing the bliss of Krishna consciousness most of the time in your life. I hope you all are. But for others of us, it's somewhat of a difficult time because we're in that middle stage, the purification stage, the Anartha Vritti stage, where we still may struggle with the material desires. They may still be there, and we're not fully obtaining the full bliss of bhava and prema, and so therefore it becomes more of a struggle. Once one's at that stage, it's not a struggle. You're just completely enjoying Krishna. But it's a little bit of struggle to get to that stage. And so that's where we have to have faith. And that's where we have to continue the process with great determination and understand that if we have faith in the process of pure devotional service, it will work. And we will become purified and we will enjoy the full ecstatic pleasure of our relationship with Krishna. Okay, I'll stop at that point. And are there any comments, especially Madan Mohan? What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. Vedana reminded me that I'm actually supposed to finish the chapter, and there's two more verses to read. There's just sort of the wrap-up here. Okay. Three? Another three? Okay. So we got... Oh, okay. So, continuing. We just heard about Nanda and all the Vrijavasis are going to return to Vrindavan. Then we have text 69. Unable to withdraw their minds from Lord Govinda's lotus feet, where they had surrendered them, Nanda and the coward men and women returned to Mathura. Their relatives, having thus departed, and seeing that the rainy season was approaching, the Vrishnis, whose only lord was Krishna, went back to Dwarka. They told the people of the city about the festive sacrifices performed by Vasudeva, lord of the Yadus, and about everything else that had happened during their pilgrimage, especially how they had met with all of their loved ones. Thus, in the purports to the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 84th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Sages, Teachings, and Kurukshetra. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Any comments, discussion?
Tama Harpabu, there's some... You cited the 11, 20, 27, 28. At the beginning of the purport, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, they describe this as the beginning stage of pure devotional service. So it's actually, it seems like it's past the anartha nirvritti stage. It's actually at the stage of nishta, where one doesn't respond to the material desires. In other words, they're there. It's still some contamination.
But yeah. Yeah, it's a good point because, you know, in the light of the pure devotees who are, of course, writing these things, that's a beginning stage because it's really the beginning of where, you know, it's like the deeper emotions of Krishna consciousness, of bhakti yoga will begin. In a sense, of course, it may be, for many of us, it doesn't seem like a beginning stage. It seems like a stage still to be attained. Because you're right, the stage of nishta is actually, that means one is firmly situated. One can fall down, but not so likely to. One has, you know, pretty firm conviction. It's past the stage of anartha nirvritti. Now, yeah, what is being described here, the sincere devotee is not so much acting on those material desires at this point. And that's a good clarification. So those material desires are there, but for the sincere devotee at this stage means that their inclination towards bhakti is stronger and therefore they're able to curb the material desires. So in other words, there again we get back to the foundational points of like the four regular principles. In other words, that, you know, one needs to be at that stage to really make more advancement. Yeah. Madam Mahan?
I was thinking of this verse this morning, which seems to fit in here. This is from the Brahma Samhita, where when Lord Brahma, after he offered all his wonderful prayers, then Krishna spoke to him afterwards. So this was one verse 59. It says, the highest devotion is obtained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of spiritual evidence, theistic conduct, and perseverance in practice. So that seems to fit right along there. And here's Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma, the head of our Sankirtai, just at the end of his tapasya and his revelation. So,
slow degrees, constant endeavor. It also reminds us, endeavor, pains. And what are the three principles in nectar of instruction by which we... engage devotional service.
You can see such an interest, yeah. How everything, yeah, is the same.
Yeah, determination, patience, and enthusiasm.
And theistic conduct, the regulatory principles.
Yeah. Sadhana. Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Pran, come in.
This anartha nirvritti has two concepts. One is itself is a stage. It also actually goes all the way to bhava. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur breaks down that anatta that arising from the sinful nature, by the time nishta is gone. Yes, that is true. But there is some anartha, like for an example, when somebody is very advanced stage and everybody is bowing down, glorifying, there is a false ego, prestige adoration, still in a subtle form possible is there. Because nature of bhakti is glorious and people will glorify that personality. And propensity or tendency to take that credit and come down is there. And Prabhupada gave an example of Jarabharat. I remember one example, one lecture Prabhupada says, he was almost in the bhava stage, still he fell down. And it cost him three more life.
Yeah. So I was thinking an example as you were saying that of Bharat Maharaj.
Yes.
Because, yeah, Prabhupada said at the stage of bhava, and he still formed an attachment. Yeah. That was, that is an interesting point that, yes, it's not that if one is simply at the stage of nishtha and passanartha vritti, that there's not the possibility for other desires to arise. And those desires can arise even from one's success in bhakti. And that example of people can fall down. There's even the mention in the Nectar Devotion of, I forget exactly what's in reference to, but some of the weeds that can grow and some of the problems. And one of them is somebody could fall down from a weed of trying to acquire too many disciples. So that's, in other words, that's the understanding. The person's already on the level of being a guru. You know, so they're already a very advanced devotee, but still somehow one can still acquire, you know, some of the more subtle material desires, pride, prestige, adoration. Those things can be there at very high stages until one is completely. Are they there? Are they gone at the stage of bhava or only prema?
After bhava.
After bhava. Yeah. 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 I remember that. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Hari Prayan?
I was a little confused by the discussion, so I wanted to again raise this point. So 11.20.27, it says, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction, even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment. So he's engaged in sense enjoyment. My devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. So it seems like, at least based on this, that this is not anartha nivritti yet. So I was confused by the discussion.
Well, one thing, I was reading, I just read this morning Vishnachakravartakura's commentary on this verse, and he talks about the material desires that have been talking about here of like being attached to family and things like that. He doesn't talk about it being like committing sinful activities. Okay. So we're assuming that the devotee in this stage is beyond sinful activities, you know, following the principles like that, but still may have attachment to family life. He mentions that a few times like that. But he says, on whole, his determination towards bhakti is stronger than inclination for material, and he's working at giving up those things.
I also have a question here on Bharat Maharaj. So, you know, Bharat Maharaj is classified as a bhava bhakta, a bhava bhakta.
Yes, what?
On the bhava platform, not prema, but bhava.
Yeah.
By both Prabhupada and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But in Prabhupada's purport in that pastime, and also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport in that pastime, they seem to give him a lot of credit. They're saying that it doesn't seem like he had anarthas in his heart per se, but it was Krishna's deliberate arrangement. Just like Krishna put Arjuna into illusion, he put Bharat Maharaj into illusion to convert him from a bhava bhakta to a prema bhakta. But that was my understanding. So it didn't seem to me that Bharat Maharaj was being had anarthas in his heart, but rather it was Krishna's arrangement to raise him. So I guess there are so many ways to look at this.
Yeah, that's part of the beauty of the Srimad Bhagavatam and these wonderful pastimes we have, because they could be understood on many levels. And yeah, I remember also reading that, what you'd mentioned. Part of it is a pastime. Of course, these are great devotees of Krishna. They're engaged in particularly pastimes, and some of the purpose of those pastimes is just to give instruction. So in other words, even though Maharaj Bharat was probably more advanced in reality then one would, you know. But for our edification, in a sense, his pastime is there. He gets attached to the deer. But then we also see he performs this wonderful pastime as Jetabart in his next lifetime, gives such wonderful instruction, you know, to Maharaj Rahugana. Yeah, I think it's certainly not just an ordinary person who is at a certain level and falls down, gets attached to a deer. A lot more than that going on. And certainly Krishna has a real arrangement with his devotees like that. Yeah, so I think both things can be understood.
I was thinking that, but in the case of Arjuna is not the same as Bharat Maharaj. Arjuna was put, but he was never under illusion or maya.
His eternal associate.
Yes. It's a yoga-maya, but it caused to act as a ordinary inquisitive so that he will go through lamentation and ask all these questions to Krishna. But in Bharat Maharaj's case, he was actually gradually progressing to that path, and Krishna, I think text 28 Prabhupada says, it is not like a karmi that he's fall down, but still to establish that point that if the absorption to Krishna consciousness is not there in the name of so-called compassion to the others, that he was compassionate to the deer, but he was not compassionate to himself, that he was deviating from his own spiritual path. That is, he was offering incense, he's thinking, where the deer, and he stopped. So it's kind of a absorption was not there. Which that intensity that he was lacking, in the deer body, he was fully absorbed. When he can get the chance to serve? When can he get the chance to serve? So that's why as a Brahmana body, he acted such a strange, deaf, dumb, purposely so that nobody can disturb his meditation absorption to Krishna.
Thank you. Nama?
I think one clarification that the explanation of anartha nivritti is almost till nil, you know, from that nashta prayasha.
Yeah.
Because it mentions that if they're not like thresholds of one and then the next one, that they overlap. And, you know, because if you read that Madhurika Dhamini, it points out that all the way up to prema, in Leela with Krishna, you're still getting rid of different, you know, they have the five levels that they go away at and things like that. So that was one point. It's almost, you know, so you're working with it, just like even in the Bhagavad Gita 270, it says, and sets a flow of desires are entering, but he's full in himself, so he doesn't go after them. And then I thought of this verse from the Lord Kapiladeva speaking. He says, in that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective, he becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. So as you're pointing out, it just acts less powerfully. It may still be there, but he's not inclined.
It gets easier. As one advances in Krishna consciousness, it gets easier to resist maya.
That's the
good part.
It's like the bluff. The mind still presents material desires, just like you were doing them yesterday. But when you look and say, well, I haven't actually done that in like 40 years, even though you're presenting it like it's ever fresh. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, final thing.
Quickie. There's a really nice, it's the fourth to the end paragraph of that purport to 11:20-27:28, which is like, it's actually a commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti, describes the mood that one has. And kind of, you know, like Hari Parayana Prabhu's question, kind of his point, it reminded me of in the preface of Negative Instruction where Prabhupada says, advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the practitioner. This is the attitude. When one has that, then, you know, even though they might not be completely, fully purified, you know, it's on the platform of pure devotional service. That's the understanding that I've gotten, and it particularly comes out with it's in quotation marks, and it ends with that fourth to the end paragraph in that purport, and it really kind of helps you understand, well, this is, if I'm like this, I'm actually thinking like this, I'm feeling like this, then, you know, it can accelerate my advancement like anything.
Yeah. I like the word sincerity. It's kind of sums it up what it is. If one's sincere, then we get through these struggles. And I think we should get through this class because time is running out. Haribol. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.